What a great influence the church has upon the home and the family. What a great influence the home and family has upon the church. There's a great deal said in the Bible about the oneness and the unity in the church. And our desire should be to try to be as near that as is humanly possible. There's also a great deal said in the Bible about the oneness and the unity in the home. In my lifetime, I have seen less emphasis placed upon unity in the family as years have gone by. And I think I would have to say that I have seen less emphasis placed upon unity and oneness in the church as years go by. I'm not for sure which is the cause and which is the effect, but I am convinced that there is a relationship. We talked about John 17 this morning and that part of that prayer where Jesus prayed that they all may be one, as thou, Father, art in me and I in thee, that they may be one in us, that the world may believe and know that thou hast sent me. And this morning we talked about oneness within the local congregation, within the church itself. And we really need to emphasize that. But tonight we want to think about the oneness and the unity that God desires in our families. Most of us that are here tonight are already married. And I'm sure that all of us want to have the happiest setting in the family that is possible. Have a long and happy life with each other if it's according to God's will. Several of you that are here tonight will become a part of a married relationship in the next few years. We have probably hundreds of people here tonight that are in their early 20s, in their teens, preteens, who are still single. You put another 10 years or 12 years or 15 years out into the future, onto their lives, and probably most of them will be married, or wish they were. And so I believe that our talking about the oneness and the unity in marriage tonight is something that applies to all of us. What we're doing this evening is very, very simple. I want us to look at four passages of Scripture. We've talked about the oneness for which Jesus prayed. We are aware of the relationship of the husband-wife situation to that of Christ and the church, particularly in Ephesians 5. And with that idea of oneness and unity, let's begin with the passage that was read a few minutes ago in Matthew 19. He says there about five different things that indicate unity and oneness in the family. He says that God does the joining together. And this idea of being together is something that permeates the description of the family and also of the church. Perhaps if we can learn up front that marriage is something that is with the approval of God, that it is to be done according to His laws that govern marriage, that He performed the first wedding ceremony in a sense when He made Eve to be an helpmeet for Adam, and set into existence a principle that He wanted to continue. And Jesus, even in this passage, says that this is the way it was from the beginning. We live at a time when we have so many choices that we sometimes forget that there are some areas where God makes the decision. God is the one who joins together. When a man and a woman become husband and wife, and they become one, as indicated in these passages that we will study tonight. You've heard down through the years that the home is a divine institution. That's not just filling a sentence with words. That means that it had its origination with God. And when we understand that, we're going to have a little bit better respect, I believe, for the oneness and unity that ought to be in the family. Also in this passage, he says that man should not put asunder this relationship. We live in a time when the trend is, if we don't like something, we swap it, or we cast it aside and get something else. We've learned to do that with clothing. We've learned to do it with automobiles, even with houses. And in too many instances, it has become the trend even with families. If I'm not completely satisfied, I'll just get rid of it. And I've even heard some talking about this before they're married. We're going to get married, and if it doesn't work out, we'll go our separate ways. God emphasized unity and oneness in this passage when he said, man is not to put asunder that which God has joined together. And there is no way in which there can be a dissolving of the marriage relationship and there be honor on the part of everybody except it be done by death, which is God making the decision again at that point. Also in this passage, he says the husband and the wife become one flesh. I'm not for sure I understand everything that is included in those two words. It may be talking about the physical relationship, but I believe it includes more than that. That they become one in every sense of the word. They become as if they were one person. And it certainly includes oneness in the flesh, a physical relationship, a relationship that is sinful outside of marriage, becomes so beautiful in marriage that God used it to help us understand the relationship of the bride to Christ. And then there are two other words in this passage, words that rhyme. One of them is leave, and one of them is cleave. And these may be two of the most important words that are here. He particularly says, leave father and mother. But the idea would express that we're to be willing to leave anything that would hinder our oneness and our unity in marriage. I think all of us understand this does not mean that we are to love dad and mother less. And in the same sense that we do not have to give up anything that's bad to come into Christ, we shouldn't have to give up anything that's, anything that's good to come into Christ. We shouldn't have to give up anything that's good to come into a married relationship. Only anything that would violate the principles of God's purity and God's morality that's discussed in his word. We need to learn to leave. We joke about in-laws. We joke about in-law problems. I would guess that most of us are very appreciative of our in-laws. And sometimes in-laws cause problems. And sometimes we let in-laws cause problems. But every husband needs to understand tonight that when he marries, his wife is more important than anybody else in the world other than Christ and God, other than the spiritual side of matters. And any wife needs to understand at that point that her husband is to become number one in her life, well, number two after God, I suppose. But there's got to be some leaving, and then there's to be some cleaving. You have seen me do this before, but I think it gets the point across. If I take hold of my wrist like that, it wouldn't be very hard for you to pull my arms apart. Or if I take hold like that. But when I take hold like this, cleaving from both directions, it takes much more effort to separate that which has been joined together. And this cleaving needs to be done with both working in the right direction. The husband cleaving to his wife and the wife cleaving to her husband. And folks, I really believe that it will solve a lot of problems. If we will put foremost in our desires and service to one another in the family relationship to cleave. Someone said that means to hold on for dear life. Perhaps a better way to say would be to hold on for all of life. Now, this is a rather simple passage here. There are other things taught in other parts of it, but he's emphasizing the unity. There is to be the fact that God joins together. Man is not to put asunder. There is the one flesh. There is the leaving, and there is the cleaving. Turn with me next to 1 Corinthians 7. I want to read this out of the New King James Version, which is in our pews, because it uses a word that I think helps us to understand what's involved much better. Concerning the things which you wrote to me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, Let every man have his own wife and every woman have her own husband. Now there's the oneness that is involved. And that is the only way, if you really look at this passage, that we can avoid sexual immorality or fornication, as it is said in the King James Version. But here, I think, is the answer to this. Let the husband render to his wife the affection due her. And likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but his wife. Do not deprive one another of this affection, except it be for a season, he says, or for a time that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer and come together again, so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Now, folks, that's not hard to understand. That doesn't need a lot of interpretation. It just needs a great deal of application. It says that the only place where there is that complete oneness and unity of the bodies of two people together with God's approval is in the husband-wife relationship. And he says, as a husband, you should not hold from your wife that which is due her. And as a wife, you should not hold from your husband that which is due him. And I like the word affection that he uses in this passage. A lot of our problems, I believe, would be solved in our relationships in the home if we could understand that a man's body belongs to him and God until he's married, and then to his wife and God. And a woman's body belongs to her and God until she's married, and then belongs to her husband and God. I think that would solve a lot of our problems if we could understand that as he has given it to us in his word. There's the oneness, the completeness. And one of the things that is so hard, I think, for young people who have been taught to respect God's laws for purity and morality is to come to the point of marriage and then at one instance, all the physical relationships that would have been wrong before become not only right, but beautiful in the sight of God. No wonder God used the husband-wife relationship to help us to understand the church. And then there is the third passage to which we turn tonight in Ephesians 5, and we've referred to it already in a sense. Ephesians 5, the latter part of it, was intended to help us understand better the relationship of Christ and the church. But some of the things that are said there are so important in understanding the relationship between the husband and the wife. Look at the oneness that's involved in a two-way direction. Husbands, love your wives as your own bodies. And he even explains that to the extent that we ought to love our wives, each one of us love his own wife as Christ loved the church. And notice what he adds, and gave himself for it. Husband, you love your wife to the extent that you be willing to give yourself for her. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as the head, as the church is to Christ. And even respect him with reverence, as is said in verse 33. It is almost impossible for there to be oneness in the family if either of these two ideas is not present. And yet it is so easy to have that oneness if both of them are present. It's not hard for a husband to love his wife if she respects him. And it's not hard for a wife to respect her husband if he loves her and respects her, is sensitive to her needs. Sometimes we men get the idea that being the head means a bossing situation instead of a leadership idea. And sometimes we do not lead, and it's very difficult to be respected as a leader if you're not a leader. And it's not hard for a woman to respect her husband as the head of the family if he loves her to the extent she knows he would give his own body for her. would give up anything that he has for her and for her alone. Here the oneness is emphasized in this two-way street, and it takes both of them. The husband is to lead, the wife is to respect, and there is to be mutual respect of the two, even indicating submitting one to another. Christ submitted himself to the Father. There was no inequality, but reverence and respect from the Son to the Father. The same way the wife is to submit herself to the husband. There is no inequality, but respect to the husband as the leader of the family where God has placed him, and the only way he can be that is to be a leader and to love his wife as his own body. There's the oneness and the unity that is involved. Now go with me to 1 Peter chapter 3. It's interesting that in almost every passage where God addresses what the wife is to do, he also addresses what the husband is to do, and vice versa. First few verses, perhaps the first six of 1 Peter 3, are directly to the wife. You wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may without the word be won by the conversation or the conduct of the wives, while they behold your chaste or pure conduct coupled with fear. You know the next verses, whose adorning let it not be the outward adorning, the plaiting of hair and so forth, but the hidden man of the heart. Verse 6, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are as long as you do well. This fits right in with what Ephesians 5 said, the attitude that the wife is to have. But look at verse 7. Particularly those of us that are men need to look at verse 7. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel. Let me read that from the New King James, where he says, husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, with knowledge, with understanding, giving honor to the wife as a weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. The latter part of that verse proves what we said in the very beginning of the lesson tonight, that what we do in the family has an effect upon the spiritual matters, and even to the extent of whether or not we will go to heaven. But I want to emphasize here again that there is an attitude of subjection, and even the word obey is used here in connection with Sarah and Abraham. But I want to emphasize to the men that in the same passage there is the word honor. And we need to be sure that we emphasize that along with these other things that are emphasized. And this idea of honor is translated in at least one version as being considerate. I don't know that there's a passage in the Bible that includes more of something that's important for us to have the oneness and the unity in the family than here in this passage. He says knowledge, and that means understanding. And he says honor, and that means sensitivity and compassion. One of the reasons may very well be, for many of the problems that we have in our families is because we do not have the kind of understanding that we ought to have of each other. One of the reasons for that is that we sometimes don't listen as much as we should. And I'm sure I'm just as guilty of that as the next one. But he says the husband has the responsibility to know and to understand the needs of the wife. And he has the responsibility to be considerate of her and sensitive to her needs. And of course, she to him. Although some of these things are specifically mentioned to the husband and others to the wife, there is a sense in which the principle applies in every case. I say to you tonight, we can have oneness in our families, but it won't come about automatically. We're going to have to get back to what the Bible has to say, realizing that God is joined together. He's the one who has the right to put asunder the oneness in the one flesh, the leaving and the cleaving, that we are to render due benevolence or due affection, a better rendering perhaps, that the husband, even his body, belongs to his wife, and the wife, even her body, belongs to the husband, And you can just read between the lines there that that means it doesn't belong to anybody else. And there should be no indication at any time that it does. And then there is the reverence and the respect and the loving, willing to give one's own body. And there is the reverence and the respect and the honor that is to be given, especially in understanding and compassion and sensitivity. Folks, if we'll just take the Bible and do what God has said, we can have the oneness in the church. And if we'll just take the Bible and do what God has said, we can have oneness in our families. And I need to be working on my family more than anybody else's. And you need to be working on your family more than anybody else. I'm thankful that we have counselors. I'm thankful that we have those that will help. But I believe the best advice is to just get back to this book and do what God has said. And we husbands need to learn to be husbands, and you wives need to learn to be wives. And in doing that, we can have oneness and unity in the family. And there's nothing on this earth, short of the relationship to Christ, that we can have that is more beautiful than oneness and unity in the family. I suggested earlier that the church has its effect upon the home, and the home has its effect upon the church. If you have problems in your family and you work to solve those, you'll be helping the church. And as we have problems in the church and we work to solve those, we'll be having a better setting for our families. And the bottom line of it is, we just all need to be Christians. How can we be anything except one if we're true Christians? How can a congregation of God's people be anything except one if we're really true Christians? And how can a Christian husband and a Christian wife be anything except one if they are true Christians? There's the answer. There's where we need to be. And if you're not there, come as together we stand and sing.